I might just have to hold it, but that'll be okay.
That's what she said.
Oh, there it is. That's what we needed.
That's what she said.
Nice and tight. Ready to go. Sturdy base. Okay.
Nice, thick, sturdy base. Yeah. What a girthy pole.
Functional, yet mobile. Okay.
Hey, could you jack that up for me?
Yeah. How jacked do you want it?
Hey, put your hand around that pole and jack it for me, will you? You're going to need a firm grip
Bop
to get
it.
The job done.
Pull it.
Out of paper, out of stock. There's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim and Dwight Creed. Call Andy and Kelly for your business paper needs. Or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and IT guy, Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin Janes, fire guy.
And with us, as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
I will destroy everything in my path.
Actually, we just... Okay.
I don't care. I don't care.
Tin Man. We're coming to you a little bit later than usual this week. Apologies for the late release. And we've had a little bit of a scheduling snafu, but we're working to get this episode out to you. This, I think, is the latest in the evening we've ever recorded a podcast.
8:45 Pacific time.
Our buddy Sean Roney is fresh off of a long workday and hasn't had a ton of time to prepare for this episode. So Alex and I are going to carry him through. And it's going
to
be really fun.
You have time to trim your beard, though, bud. Looks good.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
But this week, we will start with our main topic. And if we have, and as time permits, we will do our conference room and our trivia segment. But this week, we wanted to focus on a single episode from season two, and that is email surveillance.
But before we...
Before we jump in... Nice, Sean. Nice. You were there. Go ahead, Sean.
Before we jump in, I'm gonna kick it to Alex for some responses to last week. But before I kick it to Alex for responses from last week, I have to tell all of our listeners who are in Portland, Oregon, that Creed Bratton is performing at the Hawthorne Theater on September 10th.
Hey,
that's
right.
Now?
And
the Hawthorne.
He must be
heavy metal, bro.
I haven't looked up the rest of the tour. But perhaps you should check out Creed Bratton's tour. Maybe he's coming to a city near you.
I suppose we should go.
I'm sure you guys have seen him play that version of The Office theme where he sings and like it's great. Yeah. That's very exciting.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
So I'm just gonna be like in the back, being like spinning and reeling.
Yeah. You're in the back with your field recorder.
Yeah. Podcast nerd.
You get kicked out trying to record it for the show.
I'm podcasting. Creed.
That entire audience is Office fans, not a single other.
Yeah. Oh, we could probably pick up a few listeners there.
There's one guy who's just in it for the grassroots. He's like, I have no idea who these kids are.
It's like, what the hell?
Yeah, what would you shout from the back end? Qual, qua.
Qua. Worm guy.
Bobby Ashwitz. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have that last chair. Okay, really quick, I wanted to say was our last main feed episode, which was of course about car scenes. We did get a lot of submissions about ones we forgot, as we knew we would. So I'll just give you the sort of top three that I don't believe we touched on that most people sent us, and maybe this will satisfy you. First one was obviously when Michael pulls up in the PT Cruiser and says, "It's Brittany, bitch." I don't even think we mentioned that the whole time.
That's a good one.
A very big car moment. The other big ones is Pam and Jim arriving at Shroot Farms.
Oh,
that
yeah.
That was huge.
Oh, nice. With
Moe's running
the car.
I mean,
and they're coming up with the beat-themed puns for hotels.
Yeah.
The Radish
Inn. It's a really good scene. Well filmed. The choreography of that with Michael Schur running alongside. It's great. And then the last one, of course, the Moe's Dwight Angela car chase where they switch out.
Oh, of course.
Dwight
Operation Phoenix is a go.
Operation Phoenix, yes.
How could we forget?
So those were the big ones that I heard about.
Fabulous.
So just want to clear the air, and now we can
move on.
Somebody sent us this one really quick. Hello, you. But yeah, let's move on.
This week, we'll be covering Email Surveillance, Season 2, Episode 9, written by Jennifer Salata, directed by the great Paul Feig. It aired on November 22nd, 2005. This episode opens with the most racist cold open in the entire show, or Michael's most racist moment, perhaps. Assuming
high bar.
What's that?
Yeah.
High bar to clear.
Yeah.
It is. Yes.
This is when Michael assumes that the his IT guy is a terrorist.
Sadiq. Mm-hmm.
I don't know what more to say about that.
It speaks for itself. It's Michael overreacting. He has an amazing line where Jim says, "Are we in danger?" And Michael says, "There's no time to think about if this is real."
That's all you need to know about
Michael.
Which
is Michael's
Scott.
Interior monologue. We don't need to think about whether or not this is real. We are just reacting in
just
the moment.
Just react. Yes. Like when he has herpes.
Impulsivity and inattention to detail. Those are his hallmarks. And we, of course, today are going to be talking about the superfan cut of this episode as well. Yeah. And there is a lot of extras. And this is a good place to start because, boy, oh boy, in the superfan cut, there is maybe the most uncomfortable scene of this episode, which they left out, which is when Michael says, Sadiq is sitting there working on his computer and sees Michael just staring at him. And he goes, like, "Do you want to ask about my turban?" And he's like, "Nope, nope. In fact, I wear a turban too sometimes." And he goes, "Oh, really?" And Michael pulls out the Karnak Johnny Carson turban puts it on and stands there and says, "Did you guys get Johnny Carson in your land?" And Sadiq goes, "In Pittsburgh?" "Yeah, but I didn't watch it." "Ah, because you weren't permitted." "No, I'm a lot younger than you. I watched Conan." And it's just that scene grinds out. It is so uncomfortable.
Man.
In an already uncomfortable scene. And
Sadiq seems so cool.
He's chilled out. Yeah.
He's cool enough to show up to Jim's party after going to the office once. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's into hip hop. He's restoring a classic car in his free time. He's the shit.
And when they talk about, different religions. Okay, one Sikh, as Michael just reduces him.
Reduces him.
But in that scene from the Superfan Cup, Michael ejects with an amazing Michael Reed. Where he's like, "I'm getting a cup of coffee." And just leaves. The Steve Carell line reads in this episode are really, really good, even by his standard. He's in the sweet spot, I think, in season two, where he's between, Michael later in the show is talking like Michael Scott. And I think a lot of the line reads in season two are Michael still inhabiting the sort of terrible boss, awkward guy in a way that doesn't feel truly as well inhabited as Michael Scott. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
No, it does. It does. Because this episode especially is between this whole code opening and then what happens throughout the rest of the episode of Michael knowing what's going on, trying to get someone to invite him to the party, is full of moments where someone lies to his face and he knows it, and he kind of has to make a, "All right." Like, he has to do a lot of heel turns throughout this whole episode.
Mm-hmm. This is a cringy episode.
It's extremely cringy. The Superfan cut.
Isn't it great?
Yes.
I know. Early season two, this is a warm blanket for Sean Rooney right here, this whole episode. This is what you want.
Me too. I love it. I love the,
Andy would be really funny in this episode. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of ourselves. Let's pick up from after that, the cold
from
open.
From after
which is,
Michael
which
and
is
the
cold,
new
but
IT
it leads,
guy not getting
it's,
off.
It's a warm, stuff. it's a warm open because it is connected to the episode.
Sadiq begins setting up an email surveillance program on everyone's computer. Michael thinks that this is being done in secret, but Oscar knows right away because, of course, Oscar reads the memos.
He puts it on Michael right away. Why are you spying on us?
Yeah, Oscar is very forward in this episode.
And so at that point, everyone knows. Everyone knows that Michael is spying. And then there's kind of this mad dash to kind of delete stuff, clean stuff off your computer. This is very, obviously we still use a ton of email today, but it feels a little more like email was also in the place of like Slack or like a chat sort of app that you would have in your workplace. It seems to be based on the emails that Michael is reading that it fills that role as well. He is king of forwards after all.
Yes. There's a deleted scene of Kevin deleting all of his what look like attachments to emails, and it's like the old computer bar, and it's like one of 13,000, and it's just slowly deleting.
Well, he has that line where he says, "I need to delete a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff.
Sometimes I run."
Already got yours, Kev. But in the we get to see the scene of him actually deleting the files. I think in you know, with all of the Superfan cuts, a lot of these deleted scenes have existed previously, but they haven't been edited into the actual episode. So when you do get to watch the full Superfan cut, especially in a season 2 episode, the episode just breathes so much more. You get a lot more of that office ambiance. I think the first thing that got included is a scene of Oscar like tapping his foot or jiggling his leg kind of, and Angela telling him he has to stop. Like the most mundane little thing.
I love that.
I can still feel it.
Yeah.
It again. Angela's great in this episode.
Yeah. And you know, part of the reason that we were drawn to this episode is coming out of our Patreon mailbag, which was a fantastic round of questions. And if you aren't signed up for Patreon, highly encourage
record
you
number.
To join. And
record
if you are a member of Patreon, thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting and for those great questions. But a couple of them that came up, or a couple of recurring themes, were the documentary crew and them interacting with the office staff. And then also one thing that came up was Dwight and Angela and like the beginnings of their relationship. And so naturally, when we were trying to find an episode to talk about, this seemed like a perfect one because it includes a little bit of both.
Heavy dose of both.
Yeah.
I would argue the outside of the season 9 shenanigans, the single most egregious episode, egregious, what's the word I'm looking for? Example. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there we go.
This
example,
is egregious.
Sure. Of the camera crew meddling with what's going on in the office, which is them getting Pam's attention.
That's right.
When Dwight's eating the Butterfingers.
I think it's a baby Ruth.
Or sorry, you're correct. You're absolutely correct. It is a baby Ruth. And by the way, baby Ruth, not named after Babe Ruth, named after Grover Cleveland's daughter, named Ruth, the president, Grover Cleveland. Mm. So there you go. But yes,
Ruth
this episode
baby
has
Ginsburg.
Ruth Baby Ginsburg.
Sweet Baby Ginsburg.
Uh-oh. I got him.
You got him.
Yeah,
you
dude. You're not that tired. You're making jokes like that. Good
you can
for
only
you.
Make jokes like that when you're this tired.
Good for
okay,
you, Sean. but this episode, the plots in it are huge. I mean, really, if you're looking at the start of Angela and Dwight's relationship, that's what ends the whole series. The Pam and Jim flirting is just off the charts in this episode as well. And so these sub storylines out of the side of the main surveillance, they're really well tied together in this episode, and it's palpable. And like you were saying, the mundane stuff they have in the Superfan cut, there's some Jim Pam flirty moments that are just like nothing happens. It's like Pam yawns and then Jim yawns right after. And I rewatched that scene a few times. I was like, why did they do that? And you go, oh, because Jim was like looking at Pam and saw her yawn.
Yeah.
And he yawned. And it was like, wow, that is so just low wattage, like stuff that's going on in the background.
God, that's so good. I love that. I wish every episode was just that balance of cringe and mundane. Like, that sounds perfect.
Crundane.
Cringe Dane.
Minge. We'll call it Minge.
That's a bad word.
I know. Shout out to Keith, BBC Office.
Early seasons, there is, especially in season 2, there's kind of a magic of not a lot of physical movement, not a lot of different locations, and the storylines can all exist kind of next to each other within the bullpen. They don't even go to the annex, really. They're in the bullpen, and they're at Jim's place, and I guess Michael's at improv. But all of those storylines can play out together right next to each other, and there's really something to that. And they can build in those small moments like you talked about.
Yeah, and speaking of Jim's place, this is the only time we ever go to Jim's place, which is fun.
before we go to Jim's house, okay?
Let's not go to Jim's house just yet.
We should, just because like that's like a huge, you know, C story, or like that's like the what back third of the episode, last.
We got to go.
Yeah,
there's in the super fan cut and in this episode in general, there's so much of the tension of Michael knowing that there's a party that he is not invited to, and alluding to the fact that he knows. He drops so many very blatant, over the top hints in the super fan cut. Where's he talks about evitation? He's like, here's an exit. Yeah, where's my evitation? He says to Jim. In the deleted scene, why not, Jim, instead of talking to Amazon, why don't you talk to your credit card about that CD you never got? Which is him saying, I looked at your emails, Jim. And the way that Jim just continues to hold out, like he knows and Michael knows, and he continues to say nothing, is just, the tension is just, it's beautiful.
Awful. Well, he pulls up the chair and he sits between Dwight and Jim. Mm-hmm. And he's taken his tie off and he's loosened his shirt and he's just sitting there talking about, boss is riding me. I just want to sit in here and just hang out and be one of the guys. And he just starts working Jim from every angle, just like, I'm just one of the guys, man. And he does it later with a cup of noodles. But like it in the super fan cut, there's even more instances of Michael just trying desperately.
Yeah,
go to this party.
Well, that's right. I love that part when he's eating the cup of noodles and he's like, reminds me of college. You know what I loved about college? Parties. You know, even the professors would go. It's like
even the doctor didn't know.
Okay, man, keep it together.
And we're gonna be
the Celtics were a great team.
We're gonna be doing this a lot, okay? But in the super fan cut. During that scene, Ryan comes in with Michael's lunch, like with just this gigantic order of sushi. And Michael's like, no, I have my lunch. And it's a cup of noodles. And he's like, why don't you put it in the fridge? And the way that
you don't want this.
Yeah. The way that they edit around it in the actual episode that made it to air and this the part of the regular season two is pretty incredible. The way that they were able to chop that out. Something else from that moment is there's in the bloopers, they can't get through that scene. Michael is talking about the jocks and the loose chicks.
So he says the sluts. They all immediately and they took that out of the episode. I don't think anyone could handle that. Just him listing college archetypes.
I feel like there's certain bloopers where it's like this is so funny it would have been in the episode if like people weren't blowing it every take. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know.
Your skull will be made a soup bowl.
The whole, cool. Okay, so the whole scene between Michael and Jim, where Michael comes in almost quitting time. Mm-hmm. Jim, it's 4 o'clock, one more hour, take care of anything you got to do. The whole way that scene plays out is one of my favorite things because, it has one of my favorite lines ever, which is by the end of that, they have the whole exchange about like, improv sounds great. Like, I got improv, yada, yada. It's the best. It's the best. I wouldn't miss it for the world, but if something else came up, I definitely would not go. And he's just staring at Jim. And the way he's looking at Jim. It's so uncomfortable. And then when Michael turns away, Stanley coughs. And it's like, what? I think Stanley just coughed. And I don't know. The pacing of that scene is just delicious. And I mean, Steve Carell is this episode. Yeah. More than most. This episode is like, this is what makes this show what it is, is these performances.
And then he stands there and he makes everyone give him an excuse as they are walking out of the building. My brother is in town and we are going to he makes everyone give them
what's Angela's response? I can't remember.
I'm going to a charity bake drive.
And he's just like, okay.
Liar. No, I'm not. I'm not. And she walks away.
You too, Dwight.
And then finally the way Dwight's looking at him when it like pans over to Dwight and he's like, ready?
That's right, because we haven't even mentioned that Jim has told Dwight that
it's a surprise party.
It's a surprise party for Michael.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice way out. Mm-hmm. Getting out of that situation where he's like, why doesn't Michael know? Because, of course, Dwight is like, obviously you'd invite Michael first.
Yeah, right? Guest of honor.
He's the boss.
Where would you like to go next? Would you like to go to the party or to the improv class?
To the improv class. I think we got to go to the improv class next.
Wait, really quick trivia question for Sean, because I know you just watched this, Edwin, but this is a great trivia question to put in your pocket, listeners. What is Kevin's excuse to Michael of why he can't hang out that night? Edwin almost said it a second ago. He says, my brother is in town, and we are going to see
we are going to see like a play or something.
Oh, wow. It's the Alaska Film Festival.
Okay. I was like, it can't be a sports game. It has to be something ridiculous. Yeah.
The way Brian Baumgartner reads that line is so good, because you feel like Kevin's been rehearsing it for the last yes. hour before he leaves.
He had to look up what's going on tonight.
And he kind of takes the breath before, like, my brother is in town. And so good.
Similar to the way that Michael has to read out the definition of a colonoscopy when David Wallace finally gets a hold of him.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Hello, David. I just got back from my procedure.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Oscar's already on the call. Mm-hmm. Great move. Yeah.
But Michael goes to his improv class. That was not a lie. He has his improv class that night. Yeah. And his improv class is taught by the great Ken Jeong.
Well,
that's not taught. He's a participant.
You're right.
Sean.
It's okay. It's okay.
This is what happens when
late
you don't
prep.
Late
night blues. Yeah. Ken Jeong is a student in the class.
That's right.
His name is Bill.
But
we get to
your
see.
Yeah, that's
now.
Right.
Yeah. That's right. You're thrilled with your reading. They do a. Putting Michael in improv class must have been such a. Must have been such a fun exercise for the writers, because I mean, so many of them are improvisers, or the actors are improvisers. I'm sure that there's a huge element of that went into writing that scene. Well, having Michael just blow up every game, or railroad everything with his gun. Yeah.
So there's a couple things going on here. First of all, the number one rule of improv is always say yes. If somebody says like. Oh my God, aren't you late for work? You don't say, no, I don't work. I'm homeless and so are you. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, that's not interesting. You have to take what they're saying and build on it. So Michael is over and over and over again just like saying no to people. So he's breaking the number one rule of improv. There's also something else that's happening too, which is like, I don't know if it's necessarily a rule of improv, but there's kind of a stigma against like guns in storytelling, I feel like. I mean, obviously not completely, guns are all over the place, but like there was
in improv or like that sort of thing, it's like a gun is,
I mean,
breaks the rules a little bit.
Like there was like a film movement back in the 90s called Dogma 95 that was basically like, we're sick of like stories that aren't real life. You can't have a gun in Dogma 95 films. So, I mean, it's like for him to say, what's the best thing you can do? Like, oh, somebody's got a gun. Like, you know, it's like, it's just like, it is just the antithesis of what a lot of people feel like is good storytelling.
And it comes out of Steve Carell, who has a long history with improv and is one of the best improvisers we have, who would know exactly... who the worst improv student is.
I bet he's...
And he just nails it.
I bet this is somebody... I wonder if there's a story about somebody from one of his first acting classes doing this.
Well, not...
Is this the first Michael?
Oh, yeah.
Michael Scarn we see?
Yeah. He even says Michael Schoon in one of the takes. There's... Not only does he always go to that, he has no alternative. He can't think of anything else to do. Even when the guy makes him give him his guns. In the very next scene, he's stuck and can't think of what to do, and he whispers in Bill's ear, and Bill just puts his hands up.
Yeah. Because he says, like, I'm looking through my wallet to pay for my fortune. That's all he's got. That's it.
There's a moment in the Superfan episode where he makes Michael sit out of the scene, and he says, all right, I will just give suggestions. And they said, we don't need you to give suggestions. And then Michael just says, they are in a whorehouse, and he is a proctologist. We don't need suggestions. This game is called Yes, and in the first sentence, and Michael goes, first sentence is, I am a proctologist.
I drive a brown probe.
Yeah. And later, when I am ruining everything, you're going to wish I was on your side.
Quick note, though, the actual teacher of the improv class, Dr. Michael Naughton.
Of course.
You may recognize him as the gym teacher in Superbad, but also he's in a lot of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. He plays a waiter.
I was thinking, like, why does he look so familiar? Yeah. Oh, that's really
funny. He's a recurring character in It's Always Sunny. He keeps running into the gang in all these different ways. It's just like, you guys again?
And they're always like, who is...
No way!
They're like, who is this jabroni? Why is he...
Have we met before? Yeah.
You tie my shoelaces together?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You got me fired from my last job? Yeah.
Yeah, that's... Yeah. I don't... not ringing the bell.
Yeah. Anyway. That's funny. I hadn't thought about that. Or I hadn't made that connection. Michael, after finishing improv class... in his pit-stained dress shirt and blue jeans.
I'm not even in the scene!
We get maybe the best improv of the whole night, which is Bill, as you're getting ready to go to Bernie's Tavern. Michael says, oh, are we all going to Bernie's? And Bill says, no, it's a private friend that knows each of us separately who's having a private birthday thing.
Yeah, we're not going as a group.
Yeah. That's and Michael awesome. Says, okay, well, I have a big office party that I got to go to. So well played by Bill.
rough day for Michael Scott. Mm-hmm. Just all of his greatest fears happening at once in one day. I mean, and he knows. It's just like even my improv friends that I don't respect and they're not even my friends, they don't even want me at their thing. It's rough. It's rough.
And then Michael takes the bold move of going to Jim's party.
Yeah.
I mean...
Is bold the right word?
Yeah. Nice. Well played. Jim's party, which has been set up. Everyone is there. Jim is giving people a tour. We meet his roommate, Mark. Mark meets Dwight, who Mark thinks might not be real, but he is very real.
We get a shot of Dwight's feet.
Yeah, Birkenstocks. Anytime you get to see Dwight's socks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I always keep an extra set in the car for special occasions. So he's got more than one pair of Birkenstocks. That doesn't track for Dwight. Birkenstocks? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I guess they're kind of practical.
I feel like when we were in high school, when this aired, Birkenstocks were kind of coming back.
You're right. They were in a big upswing. You're right.
Yeah. They became kind of a hipster shoe.
Mm-hmm. But again, not really Dwight.
Not Dwight.
But what is very Dwight,
unironically,
what is very Dwight is he bursts in. He goes, Jim, you think this is a good idea? Heidecke rock.
Yeah.
Mark says,
immediately sniffs it out.
And then I love this exchange. You must be Dwight. You don't work with us.
You don't work with us because Mark's my roommate.
That does track for Dwight, especially later when he goes to David Wallace's house. And he's very, very passionate about security.
Yeah.
And structural integrity of homes.
Now, go ahead.
Another moment that I really like from this party is another one of these small mundane moments where Oscar and Stanley are discussing paperweights.
Oh yeah.
And Kelly is like, "Can we please not talk about work right now?" And then they just don't know what to talk about.
Conversation
they
dies.
Got nothing.
Which is
they got nothing.
You know, If anyone's ever been to a work party, you know you've been in this situation where you stop and talk to somebody, and all you have in common is just talking about work.
So you just talk about it. Mm-hmm.
One
that's fine.
Highlight of Jim's barbecue to me is the "Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah" song playing in the background while Jim is grilling.
That is
a very, very, very classic time-stamped song from 2005, right there. Clap your hands, say yeah.
You want to listen to some records?
Right. Of course, once Dwight arrives, two things happen. One, before all this, we just have a short setup of Roy bailing on the party. So we know Pam's going alone, which Jim asks about and is very pleased. Okay, cool, whatever. Like, he's very excited that Roy's not going to be there. Likewise, in this moment, after Dwight arrives, Jim gives his little tour. As they're leaving on the tour, Ryan asks, "Hey, is Katie coming?" Yeah. Jim says, "I haven't talked to her in a while. Oh, is it okay if I call her? We can talk about that later."
I love that. I love the way he says that.
We get a short little shot of Pam in that moment, too. And so now it's like all the stars have aligned where they're both there and seemingly, well, for the night, they're single, right? And really quickly, by the way, how do you guys feel about little house tours at house parties? You like them?
I was going to say, this has to be done. You know? Someone's first time at your house, you got to give them the tour. You want the tour?
It's like singing Happy Birthday. It's like we have to do it and no one wants to do it. Like, no one wants to sing that fucking song.
I don't want.
No one wants it to be. No one wants everyone looking at them singing that song.
You don't want.
It sucks.
You don't want people just wandering around your house with no explanation for why things are where they are.
I'll figure it out. You know, show me where the bathroom is. I'm good. I'm not going to poke around your. I'm not Dwight. I'm not going to be knocking on banisters. You know, figuring out what kind of wood
it is. I don't know that you have to do it every time. It depends. Is it somebody's new house that they've just gotten and they're excited to show you?
If I had everyone over from work right now who's never been into my house, I'm going to give every single one of them the tour.
Yeah.
Capital T, capital T. Right.
Yes.
Here's my thing. I understand that's a polite thing to say. It's their first time over. Hey, like, do you want to see the house or whatever?
Yeah.
I wish it was completely socially acceptable to go, no thanks, and it would be just fine. Because I don't want to. Honestly, I'll be like, no, I'm good. Like,
yeah.
Cool, man. Yeah. Like, I wish that was totally fine. But I think once someone asks, hey, do you want to see the house? You got to go, yeah, let's check it out. You know, and then
well, look,
on a you know, that's an episode tour. Of Curb. Where, like, it's got to be an episode of Curb where they're like, Larry, you want to get the tour? No, I'm okay. Stay right here.
Fine.
Yeah.
I will say,
Larry,
too.
Larry, he just built this house. I'm good.
It's a way to break up the night too. I mean, you know, you splinter off with individuals and you talk. You get to just talk one on one and in your bedroom.
Yeah, so, I mean, totally like a nice thing to do, I suppose.
Yeah, it's it's a nice thing. It's a nice polite thing to do, and I've had it.
You are fed up.
Fed up with the niceness.
So Jim and Pam make it to Jim's bedroom. And
oh, baby. Yes, they do.
And Pam finds Jim's yearbook photo and is absolutely delighted by it.
Yeah.
And Jim is absolutely delighted by it.
Mommy! I heard that.
But this is a really exciting moment that like Pam is just cracking up over Jim's yearbook photo. I mean, clearly he's like, it says something. Like,
this is one of the most realistic depictions of flirting I have ever seen.
Yes,
is this scene when they're the way she's
he
sitting
looks
on the
so
bed,
dorky.
The way Jim is just kind of sitting there. They're not looking at each other. They're both so happy just to like
be in the same
be alone.
Space, yeah.
But it's so awkward, but it's like so charged. It's just really, really realistic.
Mm-hmm. People have pointed out that on Jim's desk or where that sign is, there's that little hanging warehouse guy.
You know
what I'm talking
about?
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
Little Easter egg.
Oh,
good thing Pam didn't
see
that. That would have changed the evening.
That's right.
Yeah. It's funny, though, that as a counterpoint to that, Mark and his girlfriend, who is not introduced to us, they're all over each other during the barbecue.
They are. Yeah. PDA city.
Yeah.
All night. Mm-hmm. Like a weird amount.
Yeah.
Not as much as Dwight and Angela.
That's a private display of affection.
Knocking Birkenstocks.
One of the
too busy knocking stocks.
One of the...
Hadn't noticed.
Knocking
too busy knocking stocks. How can you eat like that? I'm ravenous after an evening of
stock-making.
Stock-knocking.
Stock-knocking. One of the Superfan editions is a scene with Toby and Jim where Jim's grilling up burgers, and he talks to... They're talking, and you know, there's that big dollhouse that we see Dwight and Angela in later, and we see Toby say, I like that dollhouse. I'd like to get one just like it. And Jim's like, oh, like, cool, yeah. Long pause, be like, I totally forgot you had a kid. And they play it like Toby just wanting an adult-sized dollhouse.
Yeah. A playhouse in the backyard, yeah.
A little playhouse.
Well, why does
I really
Jim
like
have
that
it?
Scene. Well, he explains, it's like, it's the owners of the buildings.
Oh.
You know, I think he has kids or something.
Gotcha.
And it's just there.
Well, and Toby doesn't even make a joke about it. He just walks away.
I know. He's not like, oh, it's okay, man. Tries to give him a fist bump. No, he just... awkwardly walks away and goes and plays Call of Duty in the living room.
There is an extended version of Ryan and Kevin at the grill, where Kevin, of course, says, not so fast, fire guy.
Oh, yeah.
You should turn that up. Yeah.
And then he turns, hey, Kelly, I called him fire guy. Good one, Kev. Hey, Stanley. And then Kevin, and then Ryan jumps in. He called me fire guy. Good one. Good one. Yeah. Ah, fantastic.
It's fine.
But it's just, yeah, it's just a very, it's very fun to get everyone in the office in that scene together. I think looking at it in hindsight, with the knowing that we know about the rest of the show, Meredith is pretty turned down. She's not going too wild.
Totally. That's
the only
a good
thing
point.
Is like there's beer on the there's beer on the patio, and despite what you think, it's not all for Kelly and Meredith. Yeah. That's the only mention we get of Meredith drinking, mm-hmm. really.
And also Kelly and Ryan aren't together. Like, I mean, I could totally see. I mean, if this episode was just a little later, you know, this would mm-hmm. it would be full of jokes about Ryan not wanting to be with Kelly, and then at the end of the night they're making out in the dollhouse. Mm-hmm. Right next to Dwight and Angela.
Ugh. Gross.
I guess it's funny, you know, I never thought about this until just now, but like that little scene where they talk about the playhouse establishes the place where Dwight and Angela are making out later.
It does. And also in that scene, Angela complains about getting sap on her shoes. Mm. And camera pans down and we see her rubbing her shoes together. So you see Angela's shoes. You get a shot of Dwight's shoes earlier. Mm. And of course.
So you get, yeah, exactly. Because we only see their,
So much
but
feet
it's funny,
in this episode.
Like you can see, there's a lot of feet. You can see in this episode how they were structuring it in the super fan cut of like, oh, we need to establish their feet. We need to establish the playhouse.
Yeah.
And then you watch the real one and they don't, two of those three aren't there. And it's like, it works. It was fine.
You still see the, I think you still see the Angela's shoes in the regular cut episode.
And the sap?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh, you do? Yeah. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I was trying to follow along.
When you go back and forth to watch them, it's like hard to tell which one is which. Like
I was watching the super fan cut with the Office Quotes script of the regular. So I was just seeing what wasn't in the script.
And you don't, and that sap? Yeah, but that's in this. Well, let's not dwell on this.
Yeah, you're right. It is. You're right. It is sap.
We'll move on to Michael's arrival at the party. Michael shows up at the party. He acts like, you know, he was invited and he was just late. I can't remember, but
he looks like he knows what I'm here now.
Yeah, he comes in like that, and it is just a full, like, you know, minus the record scratch. Like everybody just stops. And and he just jumps on karaoke and is looking for a partner. And Jim finally joins him, and it's a sweet moment.
And they live happily ever after.
It is a nice moment. And
I am a karaoke fiend.
I was going to talk about that. Just that line again. Another crazy line delivery from Steve Carell. Yeah.
I mean, it's also an incredible Jim moment too, because I mean, here Jim is literally just like, I just want to do something nice for the office. I just think that people will relax if Michael's not around. And then all of a sudden, this super, like, I mean, it's a moment that you think would, like, some kind of confrontation would happen. But, again, Jim kind of having a moment of emotional intelligence, realizing that he just needs to meet Michael halfway. Michael's not coming in accusing Jim of like not inviting him and all these things. He should just act, play along, act like everything's normal, and everyone will relax.
Yeah, Michael could have made that a lot worse.
Oh, yes.
I mean, showing up is terrible, but if he'd come in and been like, where was my invite?
You know,
it would have been really bad.
In the early scenes, you get a handful of moments where Jim looks at Michael and he's like, he's kind of shaking his head. He can't believe that Michael is doing what he's doing.
Yeah.
A little bit more than you do in the later seasons, where it's just kind of assumed that Michael is as Michael does. And in this one, you see Jim on the couch shaking his head when Michael starts singing the female part of Islands in the Stream. And then Jim gets up and bails him out anyway, which is nice.
We also, we just slightly skipped over when he walks in and sees Sadiq and the way his face falls. Like, oh, come on, that guy?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Jesus.
That's
tough.
He is a good guy, not a terrorist.
God.
But yes, we do get to, of course, the duet. It's very nice. They're singing, talking about making love together. Mm-hmm. Islands in the Stream, great song.
I love the twist.
Great duet to do at karaoke.
I love the twist that we get Dwight and Angela getting together before we get Jim and Pam.
Yeah.
Like, that's such a nice thing within the overall arc of the series.
Yeah.
All the tension between Jim and Pam for all these episodes, and then Dwight and Angela comes together so quickly.
And it honestly, just within this one episode, we get the crumbs of Dwight and Angela starting up.
Yes.
Like, and then we get the completion of it with them making out at the party. Like, the entire thing is in this episode. Mm-hmm. Like, we see all the little secret stuff they're doing around the office that they're together. Did you make sure to delete your sensitive emails? I did. You know, we just, these little conversations they have on the side.
Well, yeah. And then we also get Pam, who is hot on the trail, and asks the documentary crew to help her if they see anything. And then she goes to Phyllis and asks about office romances. And Phyllis says, you mean between you and Jim? And all of a sudden, Pam is totally caught off guard. And she tells the camera later,
she's like, you know, it's not nice to talk about people's
life. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and again, like... What are you talking about?
That's after he asked if she got
Phyllis,
Sue.
Did you or did you not get Sue Grafton?
Sue Grafton.
Play it again.
But you said I shouldn't take no for an answer.
They threw me out from all my friends. But yeah, like that's just like another sort of early office, very classic. It's kind of sweet heartbreak, you know, like. Mm-hmm. With as close as Jim and Pam are in the bedroom, they're still so much further apart at the end of the episode.
Yeah, yeah. Well said.
Mm-hmm. Well,
said. Islands in the Stream. That's what we are.
Well, there you have it. Any other favorite moments or moments
the tag,
from the
great tag on this episode? Mm-hmm, yeah, of course. Michael talking about how he found out about improv. Does the bit about Dale Earnhardt and it goes. Nah, the real reason is I found a flyer.
This is just such a really, really great season two episode. It feels very, like, I say this about every season two episode that we talk about, but
I know
season two is like probably it's one of my favorites, if not my favorite season of The Office. And there's just, I think it just has all of the early elements of it going right in this episode.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Email surveillance. There you have it. Now it's time for the conference room, but before that, take a quick break.
Running to the store has been pretty stressful lately, and there's nothing worse than forgetting something on your list and needing to make multiple trips. Shopping for home essentials should be easy and convenient. That's where Grove Collaborative comes in. Grove Collaborative is an online marketplace that delivers natural home, beauty, and personal care products directly to your door. Every product we sell is guaranteed to be healthy, effective, eco-friendly, and affordable. Shop with confidence, knowing everything you buy from Grove is good for you, your family, your home, and the planet. I am moving soon, and I've needed to do a ton of deep cleaning. Grove Collaborative has been fantastic in getting everything that I've needed to deep clean my place as I get ready to move, and it's been really invaluable. So highly, highly recommended. Join over 2 million households who choose to shop sustainably at Grove. Plus, shipping is fast and free on your first order. Choosing products that are better for you and the planet has never been easier. For a limited time, when my listeners go to grove.com/Scott, you'll get to choose a free starter set with your first order. That's a great deal. Go to grove.com/Scott to get your exclusive offer. That's grove.com/SCOTT. Manuel, Clino El Window.
I was going to say, you use fabric softener? Yeah, you don't?
When you're in a low point, you might feel alone, but over 50% of Americans struggle with their mental health. I am very happy to tell you that I have sought out therapy for my own mental health, and I'm really happy that I did. We have friends and family in our lives, and they can be great resources, but having a therapist, having someone to talk to can be a relief that you might not know that you needed, and it can truly help in ways that you may not be expecting. I certainly am so glad that I did, and I would highly encourage anyone to do it as well. That's where Talkspace comes in. Talkspace makes it easy to match with a licensed therapist and schedule live video sessions all from the comfort of your home or your device. You can start messaging with your therapist the same day you sign up. So whether you're experiencing depression, anxiety, or any other problem, Talkspace is the number one online therapy platform to help you sort through any issue. They have thousands of licensed therapists available for you to match with, and they're experts in dozens of specialties. So start feeling better today with a single message. Match with a licensed therapist when you go to Talkspace.com and get $100 off your first month with the promo code SCOTT. That's $100 off when you use code SCOTT at Talkspace.com. I'm glad Michael is getting help. He has a lot of issues and he's stupid.
Right now, conference room. Topic, potpourri, let's go.
All right, fellas, conference room this week. One of these, we got two questions, and both of them are coming from our patrons, from our Scott's Tots. Mm-hmm. Like we mentioned at the top of the show, we had a massive mailbag episode for this month's Patreon. And by the way, I mean, if you haven't joined Patreon and you want more of our show and you've listened to it all, we've got like 16, 17 episodes just sitting there for you.
Hours.
Us answering mail. Hours. We're just sitting there answering questions. Real loose. We're having
hanging
fun.
Out.
Yes. But so occasionally we get such good questions through Patreon that we want to save them for the main feed. And so here's one of them from Melanie, who asks, "Hey guys, I was listening to another podcast about women in television, and it was broken down by a PhD in a thesis that women in television can always be broken down into four archetypes: the mother, the sex object, the trickster, and the child. Using this lens to watch TV has been so interesting to me. While watching The Office, it's been interesting to see Pam go from the sex object to the mother, to the trickster, and then back to the mother. Aaron goes from the occasionally being lusted after sex object, but mostly the child, acting naively and gullibly. Sometimes Phyllis can land in the mother role. Meredith can be the trickster at times, adding fuel to the fire and playing a less serious role at times. If you had to break the women down into these archetypes, who would fall where? And are there any other scholarly lenses you've heard of to watch the show through?"
Well, what's the Edwin? You'll know this.
Seven.
What's the theory out there that like the Bechdel test?
The Bechdel test, yeah.
Yeah, can you explain that just in case anyone doesn't remember how to explain it?
I believe it's, do two female characters talk to each other about something that isn't a man?
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's a
pretty
heard...
simple test, and a lot of movies and TV fail it pretty spectacularly.
Most. Yeah. Most do.
Yes. But I haven't heard of this before, the archetypes. That's really interesting, and I like the idea that people, you know, change Pam changes archetypes multiple times. I think I'd agree with that. The other women in the show. Well, what about Jan? Jan is the mother, then sex object.
She is all of these to Michael.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She is all four at once to Michael.
In a dizzying, mother, terrifying subject, way.
The trickster and the child. At all times.
Yes, that's very true.
It's kind of amazing. Yep. I mean, a lot of it depends on vantage points of, like, the other characters, of the other women, and of, like, whatever lens that episode is through. And it sucks because it's like, well, do we want to keep this going of, like, only putting women into one of these four roles? I mean, I think on The Office, there's some, a lot of the female characters do get some, like, they go beyond these four things. But to just look at it for this question... I thought Melanie did a good job with all the ones she said of, like, Phyllis is fairly motherly throughout this whole thing, except to Bob Vance, it's just pure sex. You know, if you're him. Aaron is crushed on pretty hard, but her character does settle into sort of the child
yeah.
thing.
But I'd say, but Aaron is fairly mature all of a sudden by season 9 when she's dating Plop.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Oh God, I just finished The White Lotus. Speaking of Plop, whoa.
Oh my wow. God!
What a heel! Hey, what a heel turn, dude, for people.
Hold it!
Sorry. All right.
I'm gonna formally recommend recommend
if you
White
like
Lotus.
Plop, you're gonna love White Lotus.
Does it have good plop development,
dude? Let me tell you,
it really does.
One of the best plops I've ever
seen. Yeah.
Okay.
That's
for fans of the show.
Okay. I really love the archetypes and breaking it down. I thought that was a really interesting way to think about the show. I do definitely think that, like, it was nice to have this sort of analytical lens turned towards female characters, especially within the context of comedy and sitcoms and stuff. I think sitcoms can be so they're stereotypes for a reason. Like,
they can be formulaic.
Yeah. That's the word I'm looking for. Thank you. Yeah, and it's nice to see that attention played towards the female characters, because I feel like they're often drawn the same sort of way so often. And I think with The Office, mm-hmm. because we have 9 seasons, the characters get to evolve and breathe and change. And I think it was very fun to kind of think about the characters this way. I think like the way that she talked about Pam was really, really fitting. I think I'm like, think about a character like Nellie. So what is it? Mother, sex object, trickster, and child. Is that right?
Yeah.
I mean, she kind of starts.
But again, but who is she? She's not. I mean, once Toby is like lusting after her, I guess that's sex object. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think the characters, like that's what's kind of fun about this lens, that the characters move around. They're very fluid. Yes.
Yeah, totally.
And I think that's.
Because Nellie's chaos. Yeah. Like Nellie is the trickster initially, I would say.
Well, especially when she's like there to give the job in season 8 initially. There is maybe, I don't know if you call it a mother role, but she is an authority figure.
But she's sex object to Todd Packer and
Dwight until he changes his mind. Yeah,
Toby.
Right. And Toby, yeah. Well, and then, sexy Toby.
Oh, God. What an oxymoron that
but
is.
But it's fun to look at the female characters of the show and to put that kind of analytical lens on them in this kind of way. I thought I was very, very impressed by, I mean, granted, this is a woman that, like, you know, has a PhD and came up with this. I think she has a podcast herself. I think it's on another podcast. I don't have the question or the prompt in front of me, but mm-hmm. But yeah, just another fun way to look at and think about the show.
It's funny, like I just wanted a whole list of all the female characters mm-hmm. to look through. And like, even when you Google this, I mean, this is not a surprise to anyone, but like, the first result is the Dunderpedia category females, and it's like every, mm-hmm. even the minor characters. But then all the rest of the results are like, you know, 10 hottest female characters on The Office, you know, the 20 most attractive Dunder Mifflin employees, and then other like, which female character are you? Their tests mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Yeah. So like, even these search results are within that archetype. I don't know who else we haven't mentioned. It feels like we say, most of them are very fluid. We already talked about Jan. Pam is all
Angela.
Those things. What about Holly?
Mm-hmm. Holly is.
I mean, I think
I hate saying sex object.
I know, so I know what you mean.
Holly's sex
object,
but only to Michael.
Like, only to
and
Michael.
Kevin.
Jim
right.
is even
and Kevin.
Because Jim is like and Kevin. You're right. You're right. But Jim is because Jim is like Michael. You need to see. You need to see her as more than a sex object. Mm-hmm. Like Jim is like, hey, dude, like, see her as all these other things. But she does start that way for Michael.
Well, and then to a lot of the others,
she's also a bit of a trickster. Like, she's so funny.
Oh, definitely.
She plays the trickster role. She also is kind of the child when the other
no
characters...
more brain damage.
You mean this voice?
But like, think about when she hires Todd Packer, and everyone else in the office can't believe that she hired Todd Packer. There are elements in which she is like the child. I think. She's kind of oblivious sometimes. So it is fun to see how like they can be these different roles in different characters' eyes.
Is Angela motherly?
I think so.
But
with the discipline and like the...
She's like no she's... more wire hangers motherly. You know what I mean?
Oh, wow. Hey, please explain.
What? I can't remember the name of this movie. It's so late. Oh, God. It's a famous quote from a movie where a mom is, like, screaming about wire hangers, and she's a bad mom, and she's crazy. And
this is probably... You know what this is, Alex? This is probably, like, a reference that we should be getting, but we're not.
You guys don't know what I'm talking about?
I don't think I do.
I don't.
Okay, all right.
And, we'll and I bet the majority of our listeners are, like, screaming at their windshields. Like Oscar thinking about, you know... This is so simple.
It is from a movie called Mommy Dearest, starring Joan Crawford.
Okay.
Okay, yeah.
Noted.
I think...
What about Karen Filippelli? That was a tough one.
I mean, I think she goes back and forth between trickster, like sex object, and I think those are the two roles she kind of plays.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know what? I think mother can be applied... It feels weird saying mother all the time like this too, but
mother.
Yeah.
I gotta correct that. It's
shout out to Professor Blastoff. Sorry.
Make your correction, Sean.
Sorry, Mommy Dearest is starring Faye Dunaway playing Joan Crawford. Okay.
Okay.
We're done with that.
I was thinking, I thought you were talking about Arrested Development, Alex. When you talk about
Mother.
Oh,
no. Oh, well, yeah, that too, but also Kyle Dunnigan and Professor.
But I think like there's an authority figure kind of supervisory aspect to it as well. Not just like a nurturing mother, you know. I think Jan and True. Angela and Holly can all kind of fit into those roles at different times. So
it's, Joe Bennett.
Yeah. Very Joe motherly. Bennett. Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm.
True. True.
But okay. I just, I love when you can have something like this that allows you to look at the show in a different way, especially because when I think about sitcom character breakdowns, you think of like the main characters and the secondary characters and the tertiary characters and the ensemble mm-hmm. as a whole and like a straight man and like these kind of dynamics. But it's more fun to have a breakdown like that, especially one that focuses yeah. more on the female side.
I mean,
we spend so much time with these people that we see all these sides.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to put it out there too that any time you get to compare, take a common trope or, you know, something like this that's almost like a literary idea
Charmer,
and put it to The Office. Like, I'm always interested in that. So any tropes or things like that you'd like us to talk about to compare to The Office, please email us.
Storytelling devices, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Thank you, yes.
Throw us a trope rope. Mm-hmm. We'll climb it.
Give him enough trope.
Was there another Patreon question?
Oh, yes, yeah, yes. Yeah. This is let's really turn the page here.
Thank you for that question.
Well, and before, sorry, we had one other thing from Patreon that we were going to save. I don't know if we'll have time for it today, but we will save it. It's a deeper, it was an ask for a deeper dive on Jim's co-management. And I'm actually very excited to talk about that more and in greater detail. But let's do this other one first and we'll save it. Yeah.
Yes. This is from Allison, another tot, who sent us another whole list of Friend, Marry, Kill sets for us to think about.
And they have great names.
Yes. Yes, I just threw together a name for when I put three groups, but Allison really took it to the next level. This is great work, and we'll end with this because this is a nice silly.
This game is bananas. B A N A.
Yes, so here is the from Allison, Friend, Marry, Kill, Significant Others edition, and this is the Dwight Manliest Man in the Office set: Angela, Isabel, and Esther.
Ooh, okay.
Angela, Friend, Mary, Kill.
Friend, Mary, Kill.
I would marry Isabel. She seems really cool, really fun, and she's got a good job. She has good friends like Pam.
She's a bumpkin, and she makes love like it. Pass.
Jesus.
That's so awful.
She's a dental hygienist in Carbondale. By the way, yeah, like, come on. What's wrong with that job?
Yeah, oh, you're a beet farmer in Scranton.
Creep.
What's the
difference? Yeah. Shut up. Yeah. God. I'm going to marry Esther. I'm going to friend Isabel, and Angela's getting the guillotine.
Mm, that's actually, well.
Land. She's got land.
Yeah.
It's going to be valuable. It's going to be valuable in societal collapse.
That's probably the way to go, actually, because now that I'm realizing I don't want to really be friends with Esther.
I definitely don't want
to be friends with Angela.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Isabel seems like the best. Like,
the best.
I think the easiest person to be friends with. Yes, I would agree. So friend Isabel, marry Esther for the property.
just for the land.
That's ridiculous. And then I guess you'd kill Angela.
Esther, I
find Esther attractive as well. So there.
I've said this before, I think.
She would call you Shrewberry Blue. Yeah.
Esther is the accordion player. The actress who plays Esther is the accordion player for Edward Sharp and the Magnetic Zeros, if mm-hmm. you remember that.
Which is a band from 2010.
Yeah.
Damn. Home. Flash in the pan.
Yeah.
Go home.
What happened to that band? Probably did too many mushrooms.
When I was in college, when I was a freshman in the dorms in 2009, there was a web series called Dorm Life that was a, like, mockumentary style sitcom made for the internet. It's probably not even that good, but she was like one of the stars of the show.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh.
And Colin, our friend of the pod, Colin Griffin, and I quote that Dorm Life constantly still.
Not surprising. Next category, the accountants. From now on, you guys are no longer losers. Again, remember, these are all significant others editions.
Okay.
So these are
okay.
significant others of the accountants.
Got it.
Lynn, Gil, the senator.
This is tough. I would, you know what?
I got this one. Kill, I think this one's easy.
Kill the senator.
No, dude. Kill Gil, volume 2. Tarantino's Kill Gil. Gil sucks. He broke. He sort of broke Oscar's heart,
yeah.
and he's mean to Pam.
Yeah. His motel art.
But okay,
I'm gonna marry Lynn, yeah. and I'm gonna okay. and I'm,
friend the
I'm
senator.
Gonna friend the senator and get to go to some cool events.
All right, that's fine.
Botanical Gardens, Scranton's hidden gem.
Yeah.
I think that I would rather befriend Gil and just be kind of that cynical peanut gallery in the back of the party. With Gil, just cracking each other up, making fun of everybody.
Mm-hmm. You guys would be good at that, yeah. are you killing the senator or are you killing Lynn?
Oh, I'm marrying Lynn, for sure.
Yeah.
Killing the Senate. Senator is yeah.
we don't need
an awful person. What does
Kevin
say?
He broke the hearts of both Angela and Oscar.
Yeah, he's a dick.
Yeah.
He lives a lie. He's a corrupt politician. Mm-hmm. I don't like it.
Wesley Silver's
gay? Category. Next category of Phyllis and Stanley, a.k.a. the anticipation can be so exquisite.
The names
Bob
of
Vance.
These are amazing.
Yeah. Bob Vance, Terry, Cynthia.
Oh.
I'm marrying Bob Vance.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go.
Right away.
I feel like we're agreeing.
Put me in
much.
Those big old bear arms and swallow me up.
You got
I'm
a little bit of
life.
Cashola in his pocket?
Definitely marrying Bob Vance.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You get tired,
he'll take
he can
care
just
of me,
carry
man.
You. Yeah.
Oh, man, we're having sex in the bathroom,
did you say if you
dude?
Get tired, you can carry you?
I'm so much smaller than Bob Vance.
I know, dude.
He likes to get it on
in public places.
He is a really good. He's a really
cool
good
dude. He's a good dude.
Yeah,
good mate.
Okay.
Terry and Cynthia is a coin flip.
Yeah,
I
it's
even
hard.
Know
to
have are we
good
talking? About, wait, I'm sorry. I'm tired.
I'm holding
and I'm,
her hand.
Terry and Cynthia, Stanley's
lovers.
Cynthia is.
It's fine.
Okay. Cynthia is
the nurse.
Stanley, yeah, and then Terry is his second wife, I believe.
Oh, Well, Cynthia, they go to the club together, so I guess she's fun. And Terry is an interior decorator, so she doesn't sound as fun. So I'm going with Cynthia.
I'll friend Terry.
I'm going to friend
Texas Justice.
Alex,
all right,
it's coin flip, I guess you said.
Oh, sure. I'm marrying Bob. I'm going to friend Cynthia and sorry, Terry.
Sorry, Terry.
I don't know. Terry.
It's this woman whose hand I'm holding.
If you get tired, he can carry you.
I love Philly.
Dirty town. Okay, what's next?
All right, next category. The Annex, a.k.a. It's Icky Back There.
That's true. People
God,
say
these
it's Icky.
Are good.
I know. Ryan, Toby's ex, Kathy, and AJ.
Oof.
Who people think I sound like.
Yeah, people think Alex Rob, sounds like AJ, a.k.a. Rob Hubel.
Oh, yeah.
You peed on my face, friend.
Kathy, we'd never meet, ever.
I love you, man.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
No, we don't. So that's an
Kathy,
easy kill.
Kathy, we never meet, yeah.
But, oh, man, but Ryan, I don't want to friend him or marry him.
Yeah.
I'll
kill Ryan, and I'll friend AJ, and I guess I'll
and then
marry.
You take what's behind door number 3.
Yeah, you're taking the mystery
the
box
mystery
for
box
marrying?
For marriage, yeah.
Crazy,
yeah.
Man.
I mean,
I'm going to marry AJ.
It's like
AJ.
The only thing you could have against her is divorcing Toby, and Toby's a creep in a lot of ways. I mean, we learn later in
the
show.
He left the priesthood for her.
He is super weird in season 9.
Okay, 1 out of 9. I'll give you that.
He's just quiet. He's like quiet, and you think he's cool, but he's just quiet because he's a caged weirdo, you know?
Well, we'll talk about that more when we do a Toby episode. I have some thoughts
on
what you just
said. Have we not
done
a Toby episode? Are you
sure?
We
have.
Oh, my goodness.
No, we have not. You want to know why? Because we let the tots vote.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It was between Jan and Toby.
We did Michael versus
Jan.
Toby, didn't we not?
We'll do
Toby.
Toby
next.
We'll do Toby
we got
last.
Todd Packer.
Okay.
And we got Nelly.
Toby's okay. The last character. We're
friend, marry, kill. Who you got?
Thank you. I will friend Kathy, marry AJ, and Ryan is out of here.
John?
Oh, I'm killing Ryan. I'm befriending AJ, and I'm marrying Kathy.
Okay, and I'm leaning into the weirdness. I'm going to marry Ryan.
Whoa.
I'm going to friend Kathy, and I'm going to kill AJ.
Wait a minute. Why marry Ryan?
I'm going to get real weird with it, man. I'm just trying to do something opposite. I'm trying to do something opposite
You're
of you guys.
Trying to shake
That's
things
what Ryan
up.
Ryan would do. Trying to,
right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't know, man. Mm-hmm. Well, he's a wild card. Mm-hmm. All right. So let's do speed rounds for these last few. Let's just give our answers, shall we? All right, here we go. Jim's workplace exes, a.k.a. let's break up. Katie, Brenda, Karen.
Marry Katie.
I'm going to... Okay, go ahead.
Brenda? Who's Brenda?
The Booze Come Cruise on. Lady.
From the Booze Cruise girl. Gets her number.
Oh, right.
And Karen.
Oh, frick. All right, I'll befriend Karen and I'll kill Brenda. We don't know anything about Brenda.
I know. Mm-hmm. I'm going to marry Karen. I'm going to friend Katie, kill Brenda.
Yeah, I'm same with Alex. Marry Karen, friend Katie, kill Brenda.
Next one. Date Mike, a.k.a. nice to meet me. Jan, Carol, Donna.
Oh. Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to marry Carol. I'm going to friend Donna. I'm going to kill Jan. Donna's a bartender.
Yeah.
We'll have some good times. Carol seems really nice, steady, stable. Has a family, and Jan is Jan.
I'm playing against... Okay, I think marry Carol, we'll kill Donna, and then Jan and I will be the weirdest friend pairing of all time.
Going out to Chili's, baby. Yeah.
Edwin's just trying to get weird.
I'm trying to... Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I like it. Throwing curves.
Late night blues.
Uh-huh.
I think I'm gonna have to agree with Alex. I'm marrying Carol and befriending Donna.
Mm-hmm.
Daryl,
even though I really like Jan.
Next one, Daryl, aka BTB. Bring that booty.
If we were doing the alternate version of friend, I think that I would befriend Jan.
Well, okay.
keep going.
Okay.
I would wear that schoolgirl's uniform.
Come on.
Yes, you would.
Come on.
You'd work on your form with her. I know you would. Next one is Daryl, BTB. Foliage. Bring that booty. Justine, Kelly, and Val.
Oh, my God.
Foliage.
Okay. what did you say, Alex? Justine?
Here's my impression of Sean doing that. Foliage.
Oh my god. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Justine, Kelly, and Val.
Okay.
Justine, Kelly, and Val.
We don't meet Justine.
We don't meet Justine.
Really?
I would.
And it's easy to like. I'm killing. I don't know anything about him. Sorry. It sucks.
This is easy. Marry Val, befriend Kelly, kill Justine.
Yep. Yeah, that's the way to go. Agree. It would be really fun to be friends with Kelly.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So fun.
Mm-hmm.
So fun.
Ride in the back of Andy's car.
Pink the color.
Pretend like you're in a music video.
Anything that is awesome.
Last one is Ryan's, a.k.a. Is That Love? Kelly, again, your friend Jasmine and e-cigarette baby mama.
What? Okay. Oh, boy.
Oh gosh, I don't know. Let's.
Oh, Jasmine on the from the. Okay. Yeah. Marry Kelly.
I'm marrying Kelly. I'm friending Jasmine
and kill e-cigarette baby mama.
Sorry.
Yes.
All right.
I agree.
Okay, we did it, guys. Mm-hmm. We did it.
We did
it. We got through them all.
We did it.
That's it. No, we don't have time.
It's way too late for trivia, Amanda. Listen, next week we're going to do your trivia because it is
shout
awesome.
Out to Allison. Thank you for all the MFK stuff there. Mm-hmm. Allison, appreciate it.
If you want to talk to us, call us. Leave us a message, 503-694-9314. Ooh. Email us, mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. We're on Facebook and Instagram, Michael Scott Pod Company. And we have a website, michaelscottpod.com. And we... are on Patreon. Join us. Patreon.com/Michael Scott. $5 a month gets you a Scott's Tots membership. You'll get a bonus mailbag episode every month. And there's a lot of backlog now. Like Alex was saying, sometimes your special questions will make it to the mainstream like they did tonight. We're very proud to donate a portion of those funds to the Thurgood Marshall College Fund. So hang out with us. Be a part of something special. So special thanks to those Scott's Tots for supporting us, for writing to us and hanging out with us. We love you guys. Special thanks to Ryan Lloyd, who designs all of our artwork. This episode was recorded in Portland, Oregon, over video chat, and it is about 10 o'clock at night.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for putting up with us being a little late this week. Thank you for all of your questions, your comments, your submissions, all the interactions with us. Truly amazing. It gives us energy. It gives us life. It really makes doing the show so much fun. It makes it truly a joy. So, and thank you if you've listened this far. Thank you. If you make it to the end, I appreciate you. So,
yeah, let us know if you want us to always record these episodes this late at night.
Mm-hmm. No. It might be the way to go.
I think we did a good job.
No! No!
Foliage. Hey, but hey, thank you. We love you. We appreciate you. Take care. Stay safe. We'll see you next week.
Pippity poppy, give me the sap.
Yes, you got sir.
Sap on me.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.